We're recording it digitally. So just so you know, if you're going to take a lot of notes, maybe you don't need to. I will also be producing a summary report at the end as well and posting it online. I would also like to offer you the opportunity. Many of you have sent in, or a few of you have sent in reports you are working on in this area, and I invite you to send them to me, and I will post them on the website, on the CSUN website, under this learning event as well, as a way of beginning some of that dialogue around what people are doing. So does anyone have any questions before we begin? Or any comments you'd like to say?
Which are we starting with? With Nancy's paper or Louise's?
I'm not quite there yet. Good question. So today we're hearing from two leaders in their fields in cultural indicators. Nancy Duxbury, who's the Director of Research from the Creative City Network of Canada, and Louisa Maffey, who is President of Paralingua. So the presentations will each be about 15 minutes long, and I'd like to give 15 minutes of discussion, of question and answer following each presentation, and then at the end of the first hour, allow half an hour about for open dialogue. So again, thanks very much for participating, and let's start with Nancy's presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Carissa. Thank you for arranging this opportunity. I should confess it's the first time I've used live meeting as well, so hopefully that will, things will go smoothly. So we might go leap into this.
Sure.
Beginning with, can people see my PowerPoint, or do I have to do something to have it show up on screen? Carissa?
Yeah, it's, it is showing on the screen.
It is viewing
yeah.
for everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, part one down. I just wanted to, I reviewed the biographies of the participants this morning, and I'm very humbled, and I've realized how much what I've put together here is only one view and a partial picture of what's going on. And I should also say that the focus of this presentation has been to bring together what I was aware of happening. As a first step in sorting and compiling and then building from what's being done now to in the coming years. So I very much look forward to the discussion component of all of this and learning about all the initiatives that I've missed in my list here. I also should say that the work I've been doing in cultural indicators is very much from a practitioner perspective, and it's been bridging conceptual academic research with application, and a lot of the references I'll put in are very much come from an applied context and applied field. See, two more preliminary notes. One is that the slides are very text-heavy, and the font was perfectly viewable until I put it up into the system, so hopefully printouts work out okay. And so because of the text heaviness, you can read it afterward, and I won't go through in complete detail, so I might be rushing through a little bit given I only have 15 minutes. And that any references that are listed in the presentation are going to be included in our online bibliography that we're creating, a working bibliography on cultural indicators, so that there isn't a reference list that goes with this, but they will be available online. Okay.
So if you just click, yep, there you go.
Yeah, okay. this is the general framework that I used for the presentation, which were the questions that Kurt developed. I will try to focus on the second component and some of the recent work and the influences on the development of cultural indicators and why it's such a topical field at this point. And so the first bit, there's a bit more text than I was expecting on what are cultural indicators, but it should give you a sense of the field without going in detail. But if you have questions, go back later. So slide three. What are cultural indicators and why do they matter? Basically, the first slide, I threw up some definitions that I found quite useful, reminding and indicators of highlighting as tools to highlight what's happening in a system or to gauge the general status of a system to inform action, and to remind us that the indicators, which often become a topic in themselves, are there to inform a larger system and larger theoretical base. And but they're also used as an instrument, a tool for evaluation, et cetera. The cultural indicator definition is the third bullet, which is a very general and yet also specific one that came out of the document I'll mention in a moment, which looked more at ARC policy and indicators for that. And it's a really general sort of statistic that helps to make sense of, monitor, or evaluate some aspect of culture or cultural policies, programs, and activities. And as I go further, you'll see how general that can be. There's all this references to qualitative and quantitative indicators, although I have to say that so far I haven't found a lot of text on qualitative indicators, so that might be an interest, although it's always referred to as particularly important in the field of culture. So that might be something for discussion after. Okay, I'll just quickly flash this. There is rising interest in cultural indicators as a field, although it is the indicators that do exist out there or that are being developed are still largely under development, particularly relevant to policy and program. And I wanted to flag your attention to a report that came out last year from the International Federation of Arts Councils and Culture Agencies, IFACA, which reviewed the state of things for cultural indicators, or statistical indicators for arts policy, which actually does a very good job of overviewing the field and that sort of thing. And a lot of the, I'll reference some things in the presentation, but the fuller details are there. Having said, there is a lot of activity, but there are no comprehensive indicators, and the definition of what is cultural vitality and how does one even measure culture continues to, continue in the field. And there's no single measure. There's a general aversion to creating aggregated indices, in part because of the newness of the field and the need for the details that are would be within that index. Types of indicators. This slide was just to give you a sense of some of the points of discussion within the field, but I'm not going to go into it at this point, but that there are a range of different little different discussions happening around the different types of indicators and use of indicators and the different variations thereof. Cultural indicators that would be within a quality of life indicator program, for instance, versus performance indicators for a cultural sector or a cultural organization, arts versus cultural indicators, and that sort of thing. Similarly, there's also the IFACA report looked at indicator hierarchies, and there's a lot more detail in this of the sort of the range of types of indicators and the use of them they are. So there is quite a broad spectrum of perhaps not quite a broad spectrum of application and work, although it's not all coordinated, as you can tell. So the other question I was asked to address is why did it matter? And without going into that in much detail, the IFACA report does look at some of the main uses for general areas of uses for cultural indicators, which in part defines how they matter. They're predominantly used in monitoring and evaluation, both observing as well as measuring the effectiveness of policies and programs in a number of ways, as a learning tool, as part of decision making, as an information base for decision making, for instance, by foundations and other investment bodies in culture, as a tool to influence behaviors and attitudes or strategic effects, in that once you are measuring something, it is seen as important and so behavior.
Hello,
it's Rob Purdy, BC Wildlife Park here.
Hi, welcome.
I'm sorry, I'm really late.
No problem.
And the fourth area is advocacy, which I won't go into. We're on slide 8 at this point. Let's see. Who is developing cultural indicators and for what purpose? How am I doing for time?
You're doing fine. You've got about 7 minutes to go.
Okay. This is, I guess, my personal view of sort of the context in which I see some of the work on cultural indicators happening and has been happening within Canada and broader. along two key tracks which have influenced the development cultural indicators. One is the community / sustainability context, which has three dimensions. One is the growing prevalence of community quality of life and sustainability indicator projects, which happened proliferated in communities throughout North America, at least, and the attempts to include culture within that, and the exclusion or gradual inclusion of that and how that's changing. So those indicator projects as a phenomenon really helped fuel or helped cultural indicator development happen in tandem with that. Alongside that, there's a growing attention and involvement in cultural development or planning by municipalities, which has brought culture to a growing attention, as well as what might be most interesting for this group, the recent emergence of the four-pillar model of sustainability, in which environment, economy, social, and cultural are the four dimensions of the model. It provides a more holistic perspective on community sustainability. It positions culture as an agent of change or resiliency for a community. It offers a cultural lens to community planning and decision making, and it also, most importantly, ties into integrated community sustainability planning, which is increasingly required in Canada, UK, and Australia, at least. And so there's that sort of community sustainability context for the development cultural indicators. Alongside of that, or parallel to, although not entirely separate, is what's been happening within the cultural policy or the cultural sector, where there's been a growing pressure to document impacts. Much of this will be familiar to some of the audience members. Types making the case in program evaluation, measurement of progress or change. It becomes part of a movement to improve social indicators more generally. And it's also influenced by other related areas of work and research around social impacts of the arts, cultural revisions of cultural statistics programs to make them more relevant and effective tools, indicator theory and indicator methods being used in other policy spheres, etc. So there's a sort of a... Now, added to those two main, I guess, tracks that influence or that out of which cultural indicators are emerging, there's a number of related spheres which I've sort of broken into three sort of groupings, but it's, and this is just a touch of areas which are informing cultural indicators development or in which cultural indicators are being developed for these other purposes, which might, so there's social cohesion, cultural citizenship, cultural rights, immigration, settlement, diversity, type policy. That's one sort of grouping. There's urban governance, municipal benchmarking initiatives, and coordination of multiple levels of government. It's another area that's approaching the cultural indicators. And then there's also the area of areas of recreation, community culture, community social services, economic development, cultural tourism, which are contexts in which cultural planning and policy are often developed. So what they're doing influences what is necessary for culture. I'll flip by this. What I see right now is that there's been all of these scattered projects happening in silos primarily, and with an informal sort of threading together or people sharing information, but on a very sporadic basis. That seems to be, at this point in time, changing, merging into something that's more of a field, more of an intermeshing and a desire to go beyond just finding out what each other is doing to trying to improve the process, to improve the project of improve cultural indicators and have it as a field in the project, and also looking at beyond conceptually talking about how would you measure culture to piloting an application and getting on with it, that sort of thing. So that's the current point. And I'm going to just run through, I have a few slides here, and a number of the participants here are actually involved in some of these projects, so I won't go into them in great detail and let them talk later on if it comes up. Some of the initiatives relevant to cultural indicator development that are active now, primarily the top one is the Mapping Quality of Life in the Culture of Small Cities, which is Will Garrett Peck's project, among a number of other people that are online here. which is very exciting to see that start. And I think that's going to be an initiative to push a lot of this coordination forward and develop some meaningful points of connection and development of indicators.
Can I ask a quick question? Because my screen is not changing. Are you changing the PowerPoint slides?
I am. Uh-oh.
Are other people seeing the slides change?
Yes,
we are.
Okay. Well, now it's changed.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's good to know.
It can depend on the link, the internet speed.
Okay.
As well.
The font ends up being a little bit smaller on screen than I thought it would be, but printed out okay earlier for me, so maybe as a... Anyway, we can send you the PowerPoint, too. So these are, as I... the snapshots of some initiatives, and I'm reading the biographies. I've missed a lot, so these are some that I was aware of. The Camlets Space Project at Thompson Rivers University is a key one coming beginning now. The Regional Vancouver Urban Observatory is a project out of Simon Fraser University, which is a public participation study group process to determine a set of indicators for sustainability for the region out of sort of a general discussion of what's important for sustainable for the region. There became an arts, culture, and community component, and this study group spent the last 6 months or so developing indicators and thinking about what they would be, and they came up with three top ones, and I believe there's some sub ones as well, but they were told to really limit to three top ones, and then, so they're sort of working on that, and that's going to continue on, so that's an interesting initiative. Somewhat related to that, in Vancouver, the Center for Native Policy and Research created a medicine wheel model for indicator development for Aboriginal populations within the GVRD. Within that model, they had one component with culture and family, and within that, there was two culture indicators that they saw as particularly important, speaking of traditional languages and participating in traditional activities. And all of this sort of starts to illustrate the wide variety of projects that can be underneath the cultural indicator umbrella. To continue in Canada, some other projects, starting up FDM Quality of Life Reporting System now has a cultural working group of municipalities, which is established and beginning to work on what they term the culture and arts area, and we'll be looking into heritage next and some other related areas, but they are just beginning, so that's really great news to see that. Add to that reporting system framework. Also Metropolis, which is a large research project on immigration and settlement that's been going for 10 years now, has now, in the last little while, taken up culture as one of the areas they are more and more interested in, and the cultural dimensions of settlement and immigration, and cultural indicators to measure that. So that's just starting. Canadian Heritage, Department of Canadian Heritage is involved in some of these projects and has a general interest in cultural citizenship and linking cultural aspects with the multicultural aspects of the department policies and citizenship, as well as the performance measures that are required for programs and policies and that sort of thing. The Creative City Network, we have the Center of Expertise, which you receive some information on, has an indicator or impact relief stream, which is just launching now, as well as we have an intermunicipal comparative framework project, which isn't really indicators, but is the benchmarking and documentation first stage at the involvement of the involvement of municipalities and cultural development, which could help to create the model of the cultural ecosystems and communities. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention all of the initiatives of individual cities, which are happening, whether the field's ready for it or not. They have to go ahead and they have to create indicators that often, cultural indicators that relate to their own city plans and policies and processes and tie into the cultural plans of the city. The City of Ottawa and Toronto is ones that have done quite a lot of work on this, and I'm sure London is embarking on this now, and there's many others that have probably run out of time. But and I'll really quickly go over. Internationally, there's also a range of projects, and so you get a sense of how difficult it is to figure out what's happening, but also how to bring these together, and that's actually one of the issues we're starting to grapple with now, is how can you learn from all this and bring it together with something that's meaningful and helps to advance the whole field. This first example is it's called the methodological guide on the concerted development of culture, social cohesion indicators, and it comes out of the Council of Europe. And although it's something that you might not actually go to as a first step in looking at cultural indicators, it turns out that it has two significant areas that deal with cultural issues in some part. The first is information and communication category. There's a number of questions, as you can see in tiny little print, that relate. Some of the ones toward the end are all about media, and media as a part of society and cultural development of society. And they develop a series of indicators to support all that. The second category that's of interest within this huge project is the cultural category, which has a whole lot of questions and indicator sets and all of that being developed. So this is all stuff that's being done within a different framework associated with not culture-specific framework. Other activities that inform or mainform the development of cultural indicators that are happening now or that are related. There's one initiative from UNESCO and the United Cities and Local Governments Association, which is a European-based association. They're looking at local policies to support the expression of cultural diversity or culturally diverse expression, and they're looking for indicators to measure the effectiveness of policies of local government, and part of that. That's just starting up. UNESCO is also looking at developing indicators relating to municipal policies against racism and discrimination, and they're looking to tie that with an urban governance index that's being created by, so there's sort of a matrix of things happening there. The OECD is just launching a year project on the economic and social impacts of culture, which should be starting now. And that includes national basis, trying to develop it, looking at national base information as well as selected major global cities, which is the first for them.
So what does OECD
mean? Oh, organization, I hope I get this right.
For economic?
Economic.
Cooperation and?
Cooperation and development. And its project is actually being led by someone who was working for Statistics Canada until he took this project, so it's kind of interesting. So they'll be looking heavily at what's happening in Canada to inform that. And it's also getting the OECD to expand from economic basis solely to looking more at other impacts as well, which is going to be interesting to see how that rolls out. Just quickly, Hong Kong is developing a creativity index, and they have an online report which is actually quite good. They've looked at all different types of creativity indexes and assessed it for their own uses and value. And I'm not sure when the final report will be out. It will be out by now, but that's impressive. The UK has, I have to say, I have to look at this in more detail. A lot of stuff happening out here. Colin Mercer has been involved in a lot of work on cultural citizenship as well as culture and linking culture and quality of life and indicator development in both of those areas. He's written about the sort of legislative framework that's in place in England, which helps to explain why there's been a lot of work on cultural indicators and outcomes and things like that within England. At this point, all local authorities are required to develop cultural strategies, and parallel to that, there's a number of performance assessment legislative requirements, which have led to the development of these indicators. Added to that, the cultural strategies must now be linked to sustainable community strategies, and that has to be done by a local partnership, which then draws up a local area agreement, and the agreements have to be evaluated by performance indicators. And so it's a complex range of things, but in the last analysis, there should be a lot of work being done on measuring the cultural strategies and the linking of that to community, sustainable community strategies and indicators. So that's quite an interesting area to watch. In the U.S., Cultural Initiative Silicon Valley has done a lot of interesting work, as well as Claflin Foundation Indicators Project has a large cultural indicator component. And Australia, there's a lot of activity which I didn't get into it after this. And the last bit, I'll just fly through it. Apologies for all the text. Unique challenges. I don't know how unique these challenges are, and I expect all fields have their own variation of the theme. There are four sort of categories of challenges that I saw initially, or see. One is conceptual, second is data availability, youth context, sort of a third grouping, and integration is the fourth issue area. Conceptually, as we all know, culture is difficult to define, and there's lots of definitions, and that sort of goes through anything that's in the cultural area. There are questions of scope and focus and what aspects of the cultural sector, or how do you want to define culture and how broad you want to go and can go. Related to that, there's models. There aren't a lot of models on cultural ecosystems that you can tie the indicators to at this point when you're using them for program or policy evaluation purposes. There's the additional issues of attributing causality or isolating the effects of a policy or program from other impacts. And related to that, one of the issues is that has, I guess, been flagged over the last few years is the idea of indicators that are just really describing the environment, which are then used to evaluate the effectiveness of a policy, even though there really isn't that connection that can be articulated, but it's used that way in any case, and there's some danger there for the survival of these programs. Issues of measurability, you're measuring culture, or aspects of culture, what is measurable, and the idea of statistics versus indicators, where statistics is a whole discussion on the need for better statistics, and so you often are led to rely on whatever statistics exist, regardless of whether or not they're really the ones you should be using as an indicator, and that whole dilemma. Data availability, I'm sure that's an ongoing issue for other areas as well, but particularly in the cultural area, it's something new that's now being asked for, but whether budgets allow this question. Within youth context, I think part of it is where is the need for cultural indicators coming from, where is the demand coming from. Often it's not from the cultural sector or the cultural area, it's from another body that wants hard measures. The amount of time taken to frame the question so you know where the focus is or what the indicator should be answering is often not taken in the rush to get something and clarity. The indicator frameworks, what often you see are huge unwieldy frameworks with wish lists of possible indicators which sort of in tandem go with vague policy objectives, and the whole thing ends up being much less useful than perhaps it could have been. It was much more targeted and let's see. I'll just flag the last point I made is on this slide is one of the other youth context related issues is methodologies and practices of interpreting and presenting indicators. And I don't think there's all that much attention to this at this point, at least within the cultural field, because there's been so much effort on just trying to figure out if we have numbers and, you know, what indicators to use and all that. But it's as important, if not more important, as to how you can use what information you have and the indicators to explain what's meaningful about them to others who, and oftentimes you see report cards. Increasingly, there's a few examples of very good contextualized rationale or meaningful text that instead of a list of numbers that helps to explain what the situation is and what it means, but it is a rarity, and oftentimes you see report cards type format, which in the cultural area at least is quite problematic if it doesn't give a full reflection of all the various ways in which culture is valued and considered. And this is the last slide. And then the fourth area that I think is an issue, at least in the cultural area, cultural indicators area, is integration. And I think there's two aspects of this. One is integrating cultural statistics or cultural indicators with other domains. And this is something that doesn't really come up a great deal among the arts agencies, such as the IFACA group that did that report, because they are developing indicators for their own use. And oftentimes cultural indicators, particularly at the municipal level, are being developed for use in another broader project, in a community indicator project. And if your quality of life or sustainability definition does not even reference culture, then you're starting at a difficult position. And so finding ways of linking cultural considerations in with this larger framework in which you have to work and develop your ideas is part of the work and the issues and the challenges of this field. And the other aspect is just working with other researchers and coordinating with other work. And the sense now I get is that the groundwork's been done to kind of scan some of the major work that's been done. And now people are a bit more aware of each other, and then maybe we're ready to go on to something that's a more coordinated approach to cultural knowledge. And I'll just leave it in mind, I hope it's readable, that improving cultural indicators is much more than just getting better statistics, and that there's still a lot of work to be done around time, but better understanding the nature of arts activities, cultural ecosystems, improving the articulation of art policy so the use of these indicators is more precise, and being more aware of the interrelationships between data and policy analysis and the impact that such measurements can have on the arts and cultural sectors. And this relates back to the strategic effects of cultural indicators, where the full impact of measuring something might not be entirely evident at the beginning, but then behaviors might change to ensure that those indicators are developed in the way that I think the measurers want to see them done, and behavior of organizations can change. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Nancy. That was incredible. I wish we had a way on these phone calls of clapping.
Okay.
It's hard to do. So I'd like to just take 10 minutes now and for some question and answers for Nancy, and then we'll move on.
I wonder if I could, it's Alex here, I wonder if I could ask, that was an incredible overview, Nancy, admirable job to be sure. The question I have is not right on what you just said, but what you hope, or whoever organized this thing hopes out of this session today, are we only going to do sort of an overview and introduction? I mean, was that the main point, or are you hoping to get the group somehow focused in one direction, or
I think
a basic game plan that I missed in all the literature?
I think the game plan for this one, because this is the first sort of foray that CSUN is doing in terms of cultural indicators, we're bringing people together who are working on them from many different perspectives. So this is like the first dialogue to see, and perhaps if it comes out that, you know, people participating would like to move in a certain direction, maybe that would be call for a need for another call, for example. But this one is just to start that whole dialogue with each other.
Okay, thanks.
Does that help?
Yeah, yes, it does.
Okay.
It's Doug here. I'll ask a question that comes out of some of the work that I'll pick it up with your phone. That comes out of the work that we've been doing in the working group on museums and sustainable communities. And one of our observations is that culture, if we're going to be developing indicators, really have to get data at the individual level, so that how do individuals actually interact with the dynamics of culture, as well as looking at how those dynamics play themselves out across collectives, i.e. cities or communities or what have you, and also how the how culture functions through the instruments of the sort of formal instruments and informal instruments of culture, which are the organizations that we've created to facilitate that. And I just wondered, Nancy, if there were other initiatives that were trying to stratify cultural indicators in that way, besides what we've been trying to do.
My first inclination is I'm not sure. There might be. I wonder, one of the other areas that might be related, and I haven't looked into it for this yet, is the whole area of healthy communities, where there's the health of the individual and the health of the community more generally, and that connection between the individual and collective. There might be a parallel in that. I think there's you develop some model that helps to relate those three aspects together?
Yeah, we developed a critical assessment framework, and so it does have those three lenses. It's a framework, though, for generating indicators by asking a number of fairly targeted questions around potential initiatives. We were thinking about museums and how they go about making decisions and trying to assess whether or not the potential for cultural impact was very high and whether or not it relates to the cultural needs and opportunities within communities. So these are questions, three sets of questions that are there to help focus that discussion within organizations, but then also out of it to generate specific indicators that might then pertain to specific projects.
I was just thinking, from the Statistics Canada perspective, like there might be something there in that, although it's from an entirely different perspective, that oftentimes you mentioned you develop questions to ask, and I think a lot of the work that's been done, at least to this point, has been trying to find out what data exists already that can be of assistance rather than beginning perhaps with the questions the way it should have. And so from a federal perspective, there are surveys that are targeted toward individuals, and there's other surveys that are targeted towards organizations, and that sort of breaks out in part, but not at a really macro level, which is not terribly useful at this point. But the individual connecting to the collective kind of at a community level, I don't think there's very much at this point, although it could be in here somewhere. I expect that stuff out of the UK might be the most relevant starting point, because there has been a tradition of UK and the US looking at participation in activities from an individual perspective and working from the grassroots up. So there might be something there.
Okay. Can I ask Doug, while you're there, have you done sort of evaluation studies of people who go to the Art Gallery of Ontario and their experiences, what they expect and what they get and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
So
the overwhelming kind of results from that, from my work anyway, is that there's an incredible superficiality to those experiences, relatively low expectation, and so it doesn't take much to leave people satisfied. But the interesting thing is when you start looking at some of the qualitative data that comes out of visitor experiences, the potential is fairly high. It's just fairly rare that there's really meaningful personal experiences that come out of those things.
Can you put any of that stuff on the website that building so that the rest of us could look at it? I mean, is it?
Yeah, I think there is already some material on the CURA website, or at least from the last CURA. I did a presentation on and some of that material was on the earlier CURAs.
But yeah, I think Doug, it's Will here. It's split between the two sites. It's on the public site, which is www.smallcities.ca. And it's also on the password protected area where the researchers are working.
Oh, good.
And I do have a couple of newer articles that have just come out in the last couple of months that might be useful as well, which I can pass along to Will.
And
oh, great. Yeah, that's a big help.
And perhaps we could also post something on the CSUN website for those who may not know, or we could pass along the web address for the public site for the CURA project.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
I have, again, this is Will talking, a kind of a follow-up question that I think was implied with what Alex asked initially, which is the sort of, do we have a plan for this and where are we going with it? And especially given the recent history of work related to the development of cultural indicators and how scattered a lot of that has been and how little of it seems to be be tied to specifics and the development of specific indicators, but rather talking about possible indicators and so forth. I'm wondering if some sort of a proposal might, a modest one that is, might not be in order here. The Mapping Quality of Life and Culture of Small Cities project that was referenced is literally just starting up. We only made the announcement within the last month of receipt of the grant, et cetera, and it's a five-year research program. And we're very interested, of course, in linking and networking with all people working on the development of indicators. And we've got a relationship with the FCM to do exactly that, testing their existing indicators and working on the integration of new cultural indicators into that, both provincially and nationally. But I guess the modest proposal might be something along these lines. I'm sitting here at the moment in Cumberland at a conference on saving small towns. It's the fourth one that they've organized, and it's very well attended, about 150 people here, and lots and lots of energy. And I'm wondering if something similar couldn't be done in the near future. We have funding through the CIRA that I represent for three national conferences, one for next year, one in year three, and one in year five. I'm wondering if there's any appetite amongst people, or if you think it's a good idea to foreground development of cultural indicators in the conference that we're planning for about a year and 3 months from now, or 2 months from now.
Barb Buffin from the World of Environment Canada Environmental Indicators. I think that's a great idea, but I do encourage you to keep the integration of other indicator practitioners that CSIN is starting to blend, like this very workshop today. Bring that experience of indicator developers that have been at it in some fields for 20 years into a conference like that. That would be my suggestion.
You're very welcome.
Related to that, Nancy, there has been some informal discussions, but nothing set out yet, about some sort of a possible gathering and how larger it has to be created, perhaps this November, which might be a good lead-in to something which the Creative Network or the Center of Expertise could hold in partnership with other agencies that are interested in this area, such as Canadian Heritage and yourself. The other thing I was in it, so that there might be something sooner that we could use as a first step to organize what the larger thing would be, or that might be a possibility. Also, if it's of value to the members, to people here and whoever lives in the old address, we could set up a listserv around cultural indicators if that was of interest, to keep at least a grouping together as a way of sharing information just on cultural indicators, if that's of interest.
That would be good.
Yep.
For my perspective.
Yep.
Okay. That's an easy one to do.
Okay, so, this is great, and thank you very much, Nancy, again, for your presentation and for offering to set up the listserv, and the conference ideas sound really exciting, and of course, CSIN would love to be involved in whatever way we can in all those ideas, so we certainly really welcome that. I'd like to move on to Louisa's presentation for the next 15 minutes, and then we'll continue discussion. How does that sound with everyone? Any last comments before we move on?
Oh, sounds good.
Okay, Louisa, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, so your slide is up.
Okay, yeah, and I need to clarify that I am not on live meeting because that technology didn't seem to be compatible with my Mac. So I will be giving Carissa the cues on when to change slides since I can't do it myself. So going to the first and title slide, I guess we're switching gears a bit here in terms of definitions of culture to begin with. What I am going to talk about is relates to a more anthropological kind of definition of culture, which admittedly is sort of an all-encompassing kind of concept that takes into account the worldviews, ways of life, belief systems, values, knowledge systems, languages and practices of people globally, worldwide, and different peoples within different peoples on Earth. And from that perspective, what my organization, Terra Lingua, has done, among other things, has been focusing on what we found were the links at the global as well as regional and national scales between biodiversity and cultural diversity. Biodiversity defined at its basic, most basic, as the richness, the diversity or richness in species of plants and animals, and cultural diversity defined also at its most basic as the number of different cultures and languages spoken on the planet. And our initial research in which we mapped the distributions of global distributions of biodiversity and cultural diversity represented in particular by linguistic diversity showed these correlations. So if we could do could go to the second slide, what is biocultural diversity? We understand it as the interrelationships of all forms of the diversity of life, biological, cultural, and linguistic, and this can be seen in the next slide, which shows, I don't know how well you can see that slide, but it's a map of the global distribution of plant diversity, and overlaid, which shows in different shades of yellow, the darkest, the most diverse, the more diverse. And overlaid upon that, which you see as dots, and in some places even as sort of an aggregation of dots as dark black blobs, is the diversity of cultures, again represented by language diversity. So that's the distribution of the world's languages, and you can see the overlap between areas of high biodiversity and high cultural diversity is very strong. And on that basis, we started thinking, okay, if there is this correlation, would we also be able to find out whether there are, if there is this correlation sort of as a snapshot, would it be possible to find out whether cultural diversity and biodiversity are also correlated over time, so that if biodiversity decreases in one place, cultural diversity is also decreasing, and could we begin to show some causal connections there? So going on to the next slide, why measure biocultural diversity? That's the first point. Can we move from the correlation to causation? Biocultural diversity is important to measure quantitatively so that we can begin to isolate and explain the causes of overlap between biological and cultural diversity, and not just note the correlation between them. And then this identifying areas of high biocultural diversity, it can also help raise the public's awareness of biocultural diversity, and this might result in more support for protecting and maintaining it globally. And finally, having index measurements of biocultural diversity can help governments, donor organizations, NGOs, community groups make informed decisions about priority areas for action to protect and maintain biocultural diversity. So that was the rationale for developing, next slide please, what we call the Index of Biocultural Diversity, or IBCD, which was developed by our colleague Jonathan Lowe and Dave Harmon. I will quickly go through the characteristics of this index. I am not a statistician by any stress of the imagination, so I have relied on Jonathan and David and Dave's notes on this. And if you would like additional information, there is a couple of published papers, one in the journal Ecological Indicators, recently, I guess, last year, which goes at length into the methodology and the statistical detail for this. But what this index does is to aggregate measures of biodiversity and cultural diversity, and we'll see in a moment what these measures are, to yield an integrated index of biocultural diversity. Although all of the underlying indicators remain totally transparent, so one can see what the state of each of the separate indicators of cultural diversity and biodiversity is, as well as seeing the aggregated results. It's important to know that this, at this point in time, the IVCD is a state indicator. It provides information about the current state of biocultural diversity. It doesn't say anything about pressures or possible responses, and it doesn't give us trends. Also, it is calculated on a country-by-country basis, because that's the way most of the data are available. In fact, most global this applies to most global indices. Data are computed by countries, and therefore are available on a country-by-country basis, although it is possible to conceive that the methodology could be applied from within country indicators and the finer grained levels of analysis. And again, it's a snapshot because we haven't collected the trend data yet. On to the next slide, the components of the IVCD. So we have cultural diversity indicators and biodiversity indicators. And I guess following up on what Nancy was saying, at this stage, we have to use, to start developing this indicator, we have to use cultural diversity data that are available and easily available at the global level. And this includes number of languages globally, numbers of ethnic groups, a number of religions, and I'll show you in a moment where the sources are. And for biodiversity indicators, number of bird and mammal species, that's the compound indicator, it's already an aggregated indicator, and number of plant species. On to the next slide, these are the data sources. The Ethnologue is a catalog of the world's languages and provides information on the languages of the world, updated every 4 years. And this peculiar source, which is World Christian Encyclopedia, provides information about numbers of religions and ethnic groups around the world. For global biodiversity, there are many sources, but the one that was used for the index is Groombridge and Jenkins, 2002. For bird and mammal species and a number of plant species. On to the next slide, and here we get into the technical details. The IVCD is calculated so that each of the five indicators has equal weight. The scores for linguistic diversity, religious diversity, and ethnic diversity are aggregated to create an overall score for cultural diversity. And cultural diversity is thus the sum of the scores of these three indicators divided by three, giving each of the cultural diversity indicators equal weight. And likewise for the two biodiversity indicators. So a country's overall score, according to the IVCD, is the sum of its cultural diversity and biodiversity scores divided by two, which again gives cultural diversity and biological diversity equal weight in the overall index. On the next slide, we see how the scores for the diversity indicators are calculated. and this is shown by using language diversity as an example. The scores for each indicator, the raw number of languages, religions, ethnic groups, plants, etc., found in a given country is compared with the global total. And because the distribution of the component of biocultural diversity is skewed, that is, a small number of countries have very high levels of biocultural diversity, while many have low levels, the comparison is done on a log scale to produce a linear distribution of values, which makes it much easier to produce index values that are comprehensible. And here you see in the next slide a sample calculated for Papua New Guinea, the linguistic diversity indicator for Papua New Guinea, which is chosen because it is the country with the largest number of languages in the world, 833 different languages. The formula is written in such a way that it creates an index whose highest score, which is by definition the global score, is always 1. And I will show this in the next slide. The lowest score is 0. And this is the same as with most global indices that are calculated on a basis of a 0 to 1 scale. So going on to the next slide, you can see linguistic diversity from the highest score to the lowest for some, of course, of the countries that are scored in the index. The world score is 1 by definition, and Papua New Guinea in this case has the highest number of languages and therefore the highest score. The average number of languages spoken in the world is 45, and Mali happens to have exactly 45 languages, so it represents the middle. And Bermuda is one example among many of the lowest score because it has only one language, the Bermudan variant of English, spoken there. Of course, this does, it should be understood that this doesn't mean that there isn't any internal diversity within language diversity. All languages have vast internal variety, and that applies also to Bermudan English. But that's of course the artifact of calculating a global index. And in the next slide, you see a bar graph that shows the linguistic diversity scores for all countries, from highest to lowest, and the same graph can be generated for all other indicators included in the IDCG. It always happens, not surprisingly, that the lowest scores tend to be correspond to countries that are small in size and or in population, which are often small island states, which show up in the on the right side of this graph. And this is why, going on to the next slide, we have found it important to correct for this bias against small countries by compensating for the fact that the large countries tend to have greater biological and cultural diversity simply because of their greater area or greater population. And therefore, in addition to calculating this raw biocultural diversity richness indicator, we have also developed two other indicators that adjust for a country's area and for a country's population. And so that allows for comparison between these three ways of calculating biocultural diversity. On the next slide, you see how the expected diversity of a country is calculated based on the species area relationship. Because the distributions of the five indicators again, land area and population size are similar, we apply the same formula to indicators of cultural diversity. So for IUCD area, the indicator that adjusts for the area of the country, the expected log N, capital N dot 1 is equal to C plus D log A1, where N1 is the number of languages or religion or ethnic groups or species in a country, country I, and AI is the area of country I. And the same formula is used for the IBCD population, replacing population PI for AI. And here in the next slide, you see a scatter plot that allows you to find the values for the constants C and Z for each of the indicators. So it's scatter plot log N1, where again N1 is the number of languages, religions, ethnic groups, or species, against log A for all countries, A1 for all countries, and this shows the best fit, a straight line through the points. This one is an example based on the IBCD area indicator for bird and mammal species. Okay, and going on to the next slide, this can be translated into a bunch of maps. And when you run this through this exercise for all three measures, you can see that different countries come to the fore, depending on which measure you're using. Focusing on the highest ranked countries, which are here shown in red here on this map, for IBCD richness, which is the unadjusted count of richness of biocultural diversity richness, the leading areas of raw biocultural diversity are Brazil, India, Asia, and Papua New Guinea. And Brazil and India being, of course, large countries, if you go on to the next map and adjust for area, you see that Brazil and India drop out, while Indonesia and Papua New Guinea remain in. And if you, in the next slide, adjust for population, smaller countries that would not have ranked highly in unadjusted richness or area adjusted richness pop up. That includes Colombia, Guyana, Suriname, French Guyana in South America, Cameroon and Gabon in Africa, and again, Indonesia and Papua New Guinea remain, which makes them really the very hot spot of biocultural diversity. And finally, on the next map, if you combine the results of the three indicators, richness, area, and population, that gives you three core areas of biocultural, of global biocultural diversity that contain at least one country that ranks highly in all three IBCD measures. One area is the Amazon Basin. Those are in circles. The Amazon Basin, Central Africa, and Indo-Malaysia, Melanesia, with a sort of subsidiary area including India through Nepal into China. Outside of these areas, the only country that appears among the top 10 for all three indicators is the United States, which ranks seventh for unadjusted biocultural diversity richness. So when all three measures are combined, they provide a more cohesive picture of where the areas, the most important areas for biocultural diversity are located in the world. And so where are we going with this? As Nancy indicated already in her presentation, there is a growing interest in cultural indicators, and there is a growing interest in cultural indicators also in this broader sense of a more anthropological sense that includes but is not limited to the sort of arts and culture kind of understanding of the concept of culture. Organizations such as the World Bank, FAO, the Food and Agriculture Organization, and the Convention on Biological Diversity are all looking into the development of this of cultural indicators in this broader sense, in order to guide policy for the conservation of biodiversity, based on the understanding that biodiversity and cultural diversity are linked, and they're looking for indicators and proxies that will say something about the state and trends of culture, so that they can follow what's happening with culture in the same way that they can follow what's happening with biodiversity. So this is a totally new but very promising area for development of cultural indicators in this sense, and we Interlingua are beginning to contribute to this process. Our work so far has been supported by, first by the Ford Foundation and more recently by the Christensen Fund, and we have just received a new grant to start developing trend data for the linguistic diversity indicator, and so we will be developing a global index of linguistic diversity that will then feed back into our earlier index of biocultural diversity, which, as I mentioned, is just a snapshot of current state. And we're also, under this grant, going to develop the methodology for an indicator, a direct indicator of the state and trends of traditional environmental knowledge, knowledge that local, indigenous, minority, and local communities around the world have developed and maintain, or in some cases are in the process of losing, about the natural world and the use of, and management of natural resources. This indicator aims to be both locally appropriate and globally applicable, and will be really a first in of its kind. So obviously, as a part of this work, we are interested in learning as much as possible about what other people may be doing in this domain. And again, while this work has been focused on the global level, it is calculated at the national level, and therefore it is adaptable in terms of national level reporting, and conceivably it could also be adapted to regional or more local scales, but that is not something that we have gone into as yet. And that's about what I have to say.
Thank you very, very much, Louisa. That was very interesting. I think it's an unusual way of linking two very relevant concepts to today. So thank you very much for your presentation.
You're welcome.
And I just, as much as I like to time manage these things, I also like to allow people to say everything they need to say. So we've got about 16 minutes to go on our call, and I want to respect the amount of time that people have. So I'd like to give some time for questions to Louisa and then to also broaden the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first few minutes, is there any questions specifically for Louisa?
I have a question and a comment.
Oh, did you?
Alex again. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Louisa, on the one chart where it goes from highest to lowest, there are very few countries there. So I wonder what happened to all the rest of the countries in the world.
Well, that may be a fluke. Let me take a look at the slide.
I think it's how the Excel.
Yeah, it may be a fluke of how it Excel produces the slide. It actually does include all countries, but you can't quite see it. Yeah, we've run into this problem before, so we'll have to extract those graphs in a different way for all countries.
The other thing is just a comment. I don't have the UNDP report in front of me.
Yes.
But looking at the map where you have the three core areas of biocultural diversity, those traced, it struck me that maybe biocultural diversity is dangerous to your health. Well, those are not hotbeds of, as I say, I don't have the UNDP. Both dangerous to your health and to development, because the areas circled in Central Africa, Amazon Basin, and the Malaysia, Melanesia, those are not particularly high on the charts of the HDI, Human Development Index, or just looking at health by itself, or looking at economics by itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's a curious thing. Maybe biodiversity is good and cultural diversity is bad. Wonderful that you have numbers, that now you can actually put them against some other numbers, and it will be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Well, that is a really interesting point, which is hard to answer properly other than by guesswork, because we don't yet have the trend data. But one expectation that we do have is that where both biodiversity and cultural diversity could be shown to be really thriving over time, that would probably also give you a positive correlation with quality of life indicators. However, it also poses questions about what people are doing in terms of quality of life. That's why we have not really connected that much with the UNDP indicators or the UNESCO indicators, for that matter, because they seem to not take the anthropological dimension into account that much. And they're sort of more... They stem from a more urban culture and national culture, majority culture kind of perspective, and therefore they may not really tell you what you would really need to know that would be germane to what the Index of Biocultural Diversity is looking at.
Uh-huh.
But that's a really important question that would need to be addressed.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Dave McLennan here at Thompson Rivers University.
Yes.
And I'm a sociologist, and I do a lot of work in sociological theory. And participating today, I feel that maybe the theoretical dimension is being neglected a bit. It's focused very heavily on methodology, quantitative methodology. So in regards to your presentation, which I found very, very interesting, you know, maybe what is relevant is looking for explanations of why diversity persists or why it's suppressed or or marginalized, because I think when you begin to ask why, it gives the numbers even a greater significance than that they now have.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and of course we have done a lot of work on the theory. In fact, masses of work, but I would have needed an hour and a half only to give the theoretical background. And this wasn't possible, but I will be delighted to send anybody who's interested some of the theoretical work that we have done and engage in the conversation about that aspect too. And it's absolutely true. We want to know the whys. Of course, indicators by themselves will not tell you why. They will only tell you what. And then it's a matter of interpretation. And that's where, of course, the theoretical background comes in. But
I think we have another comment here from Thompson Rivers.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Eileen Lear. I'm just wondering how we can get a hold of your PowerPoint presentation. Will it also be posted on a website?
I think that Carissa had already distributed it to all participants, and I do believe that it will be posted. Is that correct, Carissa?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And also... how could I get on the list of people, perhaps, that in relationship to David's question, where we could have access to some of the theory that you're speaking about that you couldn't present to us during this presentation?
Right.
Louisa, I'd be happy to post that on our CSUN site as well.
Okay. So,
as a starter.
Yeah, so I will select a few papers. And in fact, I can also send you, Carissa, the sort of referee paper that was published in Ecological Indicators about this indicator, the index, as well as some of the more theoretical work that we have done. So that should be available to everyone that way.
That would be great.
I appreciate that.
This is Bill with the Indigenous Cooperative on the Environment.
Yes.
Very nice to visually see these maps like this. It really puts a lot of perspectives to different ideas. One of the things that we're working with regard to Indigenous populations around the world is the collection of that traditional knowledge,
yes.
How to compensate people and how people can be recognized for their contributions that way.
Yes.
So we're in the beginning stages of putting together groups that would work towards that end.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be more than happy to stay in touch with you in regard to that.
Oh, I would love that. And in fact, I know that there is at the global level, there is work that the Indigenous Peoples Caucus is doing along those lines in the context of the Conference of the Parties of the Convention on Biological Diversity.
Yes.
We are definitely interested in this contact in order to learn what from Indigenous people's perspective what matters, and we very much realize that this particular index does not include a lot of things that would be of relevance to Indigenous peoples. From aspects of livelihood and subsistence to land tenure and ownership systems of resource use and management, the maintenance of cultural identity and enjoyment of human and other rights. It's purely and simply the lack of any global data that is hampering the inclusion of such issues in this index that we have developed so far, but I know that there are efforts by Indigenous organizations to develop at least qualitative indicators in these domains, and we really want to learn as much as possible about what is being done.
No, and that's true. And when we talk about the cultures, I guess for Indigenous people, we talk about culture as if they're possibly areas or programs within a larger context.
Mm-hmm.
I guess for Indigenous people, a lot of times the culture is a way of life. And
that's
so,
right.
So
it's a total concept. Obviously, no indicator can ever fully reflect that, but we can at least try to approximate by being more inclusive in what one looks at, and we think that this could be useful for Indigenous communities and organizations themselves as a tool to be able to say what's happening in our area and as a preliminary to be able to take action and push for action, demand action, and so on and so forth. So we are definitely very much in alignment with those goals and would like to be able to make this index more inclusive.
That sounds great.
Yeah, so definitely would like to be in touch too.
I have a Doug here. A quick question about whether or not you've talked about possibly differentiating between these large national focuses and separating out the urban, because it just seems to me that
yes.
some rural areas where mm-hmm. language particularly, which is your main sort of
yes.
cultural reference point, the shifts and changes that take place in language and how languages coexist
mm-hmm.
and like that is closer to a kind of biodiversity model, whereas cities take
yes.
language and throw them together at an incredible
yes.
rate of speed and
uh-huh.
often
yes.
often much more complicated by other economic and social factors. And
mm-hmm.
I wondered about that,
yeah.
That focus on urbanization.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that is a very important point, too, and we have thought about it. Obviously, when you look at things at the global level, you are pretty much diluting the urban into the rural.
Right.
So the patterns you get, because, you know, in spite of the growth of cities, most of the world population is still living in rural areas. You really, you know, mostly get the picture of from a rural point of view, but cities are increasingly the centers of migration and they are ballooning all over the world, and of course there are issues of cultural diversity and even of biodiversity, of course, in cities that would need to be addressed.
Yes.
We haven't yet thought of how this sort of index could be adapted for the purposes of urban research or indicator-based research, but that is a very important area for development, for sure. So that, you know, anybody who might have ideas and input on that, we would be delighted to hear.
Okay.
Any other questions?
If I could just add one comment, it's Ellen Woodley here.
Oh, hi, Ellen.
just for people's interest, it's not related to the last question, but the previous one said, Paralingua has also been working on a source book, and that's compiling information on projects on the ground, and that's more at a local level where we might see causal relationships between biodiversity and specific cultures. And we have 44 different projects, and a lot of them are in collaboration with indigenous groups, so there's a progress report on the website, and soon there will be the technical report available.
Yeah, and that is the way we've been operating. Really, we started from this global picture because that was the thing that struck us first. These correlations, and now we are sort of zooming in, trying to go from the correlations to causation. Which, and of course, causation is first and foremost at the local level. That's where people with their social and cultural based worldviews and ways of life and practices interact with the environment, with nature, and of course in many indigenous and local cultures, those are not even, you know, two separate things, but just parts of the same whole. People and nature and those interactions having occurred over time for many generations necessarily leads to mutual influencing and mutual adaptations. Humans have adapted to local environments while at the same time adapting them to their needs, subsistence and survival needs, and this forms like a complex system that needs to be understood first and foremost at the local level. But indicators at the local level are still probably some way ahead of us in terms of understanding. So we'll have to have another meeting about that in a few years.
One more comment, if possible. This is Steve in Edmonton.
Yes.
And this discussion reminds me of my graduate work 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed courses in cultural ecology.
Yes.
And a lot of the research that went on about how the environment shaped the possible cultural responses.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we'll be looking at some of that work.
Yes.
However, it may have changed in the past 30 years, I don't know.
That's right, that's right. And I guess that is relevant because it really brought up sort of the evolutionary, cultural evolutionary perspective in terms of how humans, human cultures are at least to some extent shaped by their environment. But sort of this new generation of research is a little bit less deterministic and also looks at ways in which humans
through their own activities have modified and adapted the environment in which they live and have contributed even to the creation, not only to the maintenance of biodiversity, but in many cases also to its creation through practices both in what were once thought to be pristine forests or for instance in terms of agrobiodiversity, etc. So it really looks at the picture both ways, more in a feedback loop kind of way rather than in a more deterministic way as the early cultural ecology did. But yes, it is it's kind of part of the same the same intellectual history, if you wish.
So I'm going to stop the discussion now, unfortunately. I feel like I could continue listening for hours to this. And it's been very, very interesting. And what I'd like to suggest is just ask Nancy how she'd like to proceed with possibly setting up a list.
I was making notes for myself about who I had asked about that. I guess I'll talk to my colleagues here as to time-wise. I expect by the end of this month we could set up something and enter. You could send an interesting. We can add people to the listserv ourselves, and what we need is the contact information, which you may have already. Although I guess an invitation to everyone who was on that original email is probably good before we join the show listserv. So I can talk with Carissa and Will as well, who has a huge list of emails as well, as to an invitation or a notice to say that what this is and it's starting, and then we can send it out to our various lists and contacts, and it'd be open to anyone who is interested in joining in.
That's great. Thanks.
I'm just saying, time-wise, probably early July would be easiest. We have the World Urban Forum sending upon us in a week's time, so
right.
It's taking over everything.
And in the meantime, we'll have on the CSUN website the recording of this call, as well as the presentations from this call, as well as any documentation, research, other works that you would like to have posted there for people who were participated on this call, but also for people who are browsing the net and find the page and would like to know more about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also appreciate if anyone has feedback about how this call went and any suggestions. I'm very happy to hear those as well.
Okay, this is Louisa. One thing that would be useful would be the list of participants that we got. If it could be circulated again with the emails attached to each person, so that if anybody wants to contact anybody else, it will be easy to find out how to do that.
That would be fine, and unless I hear from anyone that they would prefer not to be on that list, I would be happy to do that. So please let me know in the next day or so if you'd like to not be on that list. Other than that, I just wanted to say thank you to Will and his group for supporting the live meeting portion of this call very much. It was very much appreciated. And thanks for joining in, and hopefully our dialogue will continue.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Great.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye.